And we're back. Welcome to yet another episode.
Did we ever leave?
What? Yes, we left.
Okay.
But we're back. And we're most back. Importantly, God, we hope that they have left. We hope that our listeners are not just sitting around staring at their computer for a week. Oh, man, when can
Wait
we hear?
Minute. I listen to all 19 shows in a row every night, don't you?
Dear God. No, Ed, because I have a life. I have to earn money and shit. Show number 19. This is Deep Thinking, the motorcycle road racing podcast. I am Michael Gugis. You can find my insane motorcycle related rantings at motorbikeroadracing.blogspot.com. And Ed Sorbo is from Lindemann Engineering. You can find his insane rantings and some much more rational stuff over at the Lindemann Engineering website, which is le-suspension.com. You will hear some noises in the background this time.
Like that.
Yeah, like that. Some of it's thunder. We are racing to get a set of forks done before the thunderstorm hits, because I don't like to ride in the rain. I'm from Southern California.
Weather wimp.
I am. I absolutely. I believe I'm kind of like one of the Wicked Witches of the West, man, you know? Rain is bad. I'm from California.
Amo ika ai anapono I, which is a poor translation of the Hawaiian phrase, "When the heavens cry, long live the earth."
Yeah. Okay. You ride the bandit in the rain, dude, on the freeway. Yeah. By the way, have you looked at the date code on these tires yet?
Don't care.
Don't. I do.
I'm not riding the bike.
I was gonna say I'm riding it. This must be one of those deals.
So why all the noises behind besides the thunder?
Oh, because we're doing suspension.
We are. We
absolutely we are.
I'm working on Michael's forks on my bench while we're doing a podcast.
We'll
see how this goes.
Would this be happening if I weren't here? So hence, ergo ipso facto, we.
Okay, you win that one. That was good.
Yeah, this is
not good.
This is actually really kind of cool. We are, dear, what was that?
Somebody worked on these. I don't know what that is.
Oh, man.
It's not in the shape that it was originally in.
That is one mangled up piece of stuff, dude. Ed, you need to take a picture of that, and we can use that as the photo for this podcast. Hey, anyway, the reason that this is actually kind of cool is that we're going to do this podcast while Ed's working on the forks. He's going to talk a little bit about suspension and stuff. Hopefully the thunderstorm will hold off. Hopefully that huge frickin' cat that is outside will stay outside, because that is one tough-looking kitty.
That's Monk.
Monk. Monk is not to be trifled with. Monk flashed a fang at me, and I ran the other way, man. That cat...
Actually, Monk's old. He's already lost half his teeth. We have to give him soft food.
He's still one tough-looking customer.
He still goes and picks on the neighborhood dogs.
You know, by this point, he probably just lifts a... He probably just lifts, like, a paw.
He does like Tony Sarah. He just looks at him,
and they go the other way. He's like, oh, man, we're not... That's some pussy you can keep right there. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
That was weekly good.
That was, dude, that was,
okay,
that was
so
borderline. That
while
was
I'm borderline. Working on Michael Gugis's forks that turn out to be cartridge forks, not damper rod forks like you thought.
I absolutely, you know what? It's because of, what is it, Schroeder's cat?
Schroeder's cat.
Right? You know, we didn't
He's
know.
Not there unless you open the box.
Exactly. They were damper rod forks until we opened them up.
I opened them up. Okay, so the number one thing that people need to understand, know, learn, change, add to their understanding of suspension is critical thinking. So the best example of the biggest problem that people encounter is that the guy who works for XYZ Suspension Corporation says it's better, and you just go, yeah, it's better, I'll buy that. Okay? So there's a couple of things going on there. One is...
It probably is better.
But better is a relative term, right?
Right, exactly.
If better is only better than the compromised suspension that your bike came with, because remember, Yamaha, Honda, BMW, all of them, they don't know who's buying the bike.
Right.
If they build the bike for a big, heavy person, then small, light people will crash.
Right.
If they build the bike for small, light people...
Heavy people
have kind of a wallowy ride, but they don't crash, right?
Right?
So the lesser of the two evils is, and also most people are in the entry level category when they're buying their motorcycles. Once you're hooked, you're going to buy more motorcycles, and there's all these reasons for it. It's got nothing to do with, little to do with the bike. Like, Yamaha sold almost all of their R1Ms that they bring into California before you could even get the bike.
Right.
You don't need the bike on the showroom floor to buy that bike.
No. That one, there were 500 people who would have you know, shot their moms for that bike.
Right. So the person you're selling a bike to on the showroom floor is more likely to be a new person.
Right.
And first impression is really important in all things. Correct. So you get on a motorcycle and you bounce up and down on it and it moves nice while the salesman's there talking to you. You think everything is good, okay? But a bike that handles really well doesn't bounce up and down very easily,
very nicely,
right? It's got stronger springs, etc. So the things that make the bike feel good to a new rider on the showroom floor are not necessarily the things that make the bike actually handle well.
Okay.
Okay, so making something that's better than that, not very hard, right? So if your standard is, I'll pay you thousands of dollars for something just because it's a little tiny bit better than what I had, well, then you're going to buy a lot of that stuff and make that world happy, and you're going to support commerce, and those are all good things. But you could have a lot better suspension. So that's the first place.
So what you're saying is the difference between, or the old saying, good is the enemy of best.
Yes, absolutely. So what I'm saying
I took thousands of words of Ed's and just condensed it into a few there.
Dude, you are so lucky that you can't live inside my brain and have to listen to what I hear going back and forth all the time.
I'd have to go to the doctor and get shots if I lived in there.
All those days, years, driving across the country in the motorhome.
Oh, believe me.
You think I was by myself?
Hey, no.
Hell no.
No, dude, tens of thousands of miles on a motorcycle.
What's the word that starts with C and it describes a huge, horrendous amount of noise? Clatterfear?
Cacophony.
Cacophony. That's it. That's what's in my head all the time.
Believe me. So all those thousands of miles on the bike by myself, no stereo system. Yep,
oh, that's
same
even
thing.
Worse.
Yeah, same thing. All right, go on.
Okay, so when you're talking to somebody and they tell you it's better,
right?
You need to ask, why is it better? And you don't even have to know the answer yourself, right? But if they can explain it in the way that you understand,
okay,
then they're probably, you know, correct. They probably have a good understanding themselves. In other words, if you can't explain it to a six-year-old, you don't understand it yourself.
Right?
Okay, so apply that standard to what I start talking about in the rest of this podcast.
Okay.
Which hopefully when we listen to this later, it'll be clear enough and that we can hear me and whatnot, and we can use it.
Well, the medium is not going to be the problem. I think the content is going to be the problem.
So we're going to start with springs.
All right.
You can kind of sort of think of the spring as the skeleton. You know, the spring is holding up the weight of you and the motorcycle. And if you don't have the spring, you know, it's kind of pointless. So what does a spring do? The spring holds up the weight of you and the motorcycle. So for that reason, I want you to think of springs in terms of how strong or how weak they are. Because that's the job. They're holding up a weight. Springs are not soft or hard. They're stronger or weaker. And this, I think, is an important point because it's a language limitation.
Right.
If you think of a spring as stronger or weaker, that leads to you thinking about what the spring needs to do.
Right.
Right? If you think about the spring as being harder, you're going to be like, well, I don't want a harder spring. I want a softer spring. Right. Hard is bad.
Plush is better.
Exactly. Okay? So this is an important. Now, the reason that most people say softer or stiffer or weak, you know, harder or softer is I think it started with an English translation problem.
Really?
From Japanese or Italian or whatever.
Okay.
The word was first written down with a not perfect translation and then it stuck.
You have no evidence of this.
I've seen a lot of screwed up translations in a lot of manuals.
Oh, man.
And I'm extrapolating.
If you
look in a manual, they all say harder and softer, and they don't say stronger and weaker.
All I know that one of my favorite comedy books ever was the translated manual for my 74 RD400, the 76 RD400.
Yeah.
Right? Go on.
Okay, so springs are stronger or weaker, and how do we talk about the strength of a spring? We use the term rate, R-A-T-E. Tells you how strong or weak a spring is.
Okay.
You can measure the rate of a spring in the metric system or the English standard system. You can measure it as pounds per inch
or kilograms per millimeter,
right,
or Newton meters,
right,
per meter.
Okay.
And Newton meters per meter,
okay,
and kilograms per meter.
Okay.
If you're close to the surface of the Earth, all you have to do is move the decimal place 1 point, the numbers are the same. The difference is so small that you can ignore it.
Okay.
So when your Olin springs are measured in Newton meters, but you just move the decimal place over one and say kilograms per millimeter, and
close
it's effectively
enough.
The same, yeah.
Okay.
So we'll use inches, pounds per inch, because most Americans' heads gets around that easier. What that means is if I got a spring sitting here on the bench, and I put a 100-pound weight on top of it, it will compress the spring 1 inch.
Right.
It's a 100-pound spring. And springs go up as high as you want, right? A lot of bikes have 1,000-pound springs, okay? So, or, you know, if we did kilograms per millimeters, you put a kilogram on top, and it's going to compress it 1 millimeter.
All right.
Okay? Got it. So, let's do a test, Michael.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I have a spring here.
Okay.
I put 100 pounds on top of it.
Right.
It's now 1 inch shorter than it was.
Right.
How many pounds will I have to have on the spring total to get it another inch shorter?
Another 100.
Another 100. So now 200 pounds compresses the spring 2 inches.
Right.
300 pounds, 3 inches.
Right.
So this is a straight rate or a linear
rate
spring.
Wait a minute. We're not going to be talking about progressive round springs, are we?
Progressively wound springs are the work of the devil.
Okay.
Thank you for setting that up for me.
Oh, Jesus.
A progressively wound spring would start out weak, and after you use up that part of the spring, then it would take more force to compress it the next amount. And, of course, it fades from the weaker rate to the stronger rate. It doesn't happen just like a switch.
Right.
We'll get into why we don't want progressively wound springs later.
Because you don't have time.
Oh, yeah? Are we almost out?
No. We're not almost out, but you got important things to say other than
If we cover springs in this episode, that's going to be enough.
Okay, and just look, with shorthand here. Listener, please, progressive wound spring, work of the devil, send us Hickory Farms. Okay, Ed, keep going.
Okay, so we have a straight rate spring. We added the weight on top of it. Okay,
Michael,
next test.
Oh, boy.
I have a 100-pound spring here on the bench.
Okay.
I install it on a shock.
Right.
The shock has a threaded collar.
Right.
Or a stepped collar, which I can change the preload.
Okay.
I shorten the spring by half an inch. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me make it easy for you. I shorten the spring by 1 inch with the preload collar.
Got it.
Mechanically, the spring is now shorter.
Correct.
It is storing 100 pounds of energy in itself now.
Correct.
Okay. If I put 50 pounds on top of the shock now,
okay.
Will the shock and spring assembly compress?
Yes.
No.
Why not?
Because it's pushing back with 100 pounds of force. And until you put more than 100 pounds on it, it will not move. That is what preload is. Preload stores energy in a spring. It does not make the spring stronger. By making the spring 1 inch shorter, the spring is pushing back against that restraint with 100 pounds of force.
Okay.
So if you put 100 pounds on top of it, nothing happens.
Okay. I actually understand that. I feel as smart as a sixth grader.
There you go. If you put 200 pounds on top of that, what happens?
It'll move 1 inch.
One more inch, a total of 2. Exactly.
Right. Got it. Okay.
So the thing to understand here, the takeaway is you're riding your motorcycle.
Right.
It's got a weak spring.
Right.
And you run over a bump. The suspension compresses the height of the bump.
Okay.
Okay. You put a bunch of preload in your bike.
Right.
You go for a ride. When you sat on the bike was a little bit taller than it was before because you stored the energy.
Right.
And your butt doesn't make this thing compress
until
it gets to, it had a higher starting point. But once you're moving, when you run over that bump, same total amount of travel.
Same total amount of travel. So why do we bother with preload?
Because it's a marketing trick. Preload adjustment is the least expensive adjustment you can add to the suspension.
Got it.
And people will pay more because the bike has adjustments.
Got it.
Right? And it doesn't do anything for handling. In fact, think about it this way. If you have a weak spring and you run over a bump, you go down too far in the travel, the suspension moves slower, the ride's shitty, that's one problem.
Right.
If you put a bunch of preload into your spring and run over the bump, goes down just as far,
rides just as bad. You have the same one problem, but now you've got more stored energy in the spring, and it releases after the bump or after the corner. Right. Note, after the bump or the corner, bumps and corners are the same as far as your suspension is concerned. And so that released energy has to be controlled after the bump or the corner.
Got it.
Right? And right. Now your bike is all boingy, boingy, boingy
right.
afterwards. Now you have two problems. You could have just stayed with the one problem.
Right.
Plus,
because
when your suspension...
Hold on, slow down. Because by cranking and preload, you're storing more energy in the spring.
Exactly.
Wow.
So
I'm up to seventh, maybe even eighth grade.
So there is a perfect amount of preload for a spring.
Now,
and when you add more preload beyond that range, you just make problems.
How much is that perfect amount of preload?
You know, it's an opinion kind of thing.
Okay.
And I'm not going to give that piece of information away for free. It has value to me.
Ah.
When my customers, people who are paying me,
right.
I tell them how much preload I put on their spring, and I tell them the range. But I'm not going to just put it out in the world where other suspension guys can go, oh, yeah, that's a better number than my number.
Got it. Okay.
So it's proprietary.
Like my gambling system.
And there, but I'm going to give you an idea of, okay, so we got this great example of why we have preload.
Right.
Why do you value preload so much? Because the adjuster's on the bike, and
right.
you assumed it was put there for an engineering reason.
Absolutely.
And if it was, therefore, da-da-da-da-da.
Right.
But it was put there for a marketing reason, and from that perspective, you go, oh, well, then it has a completely different meaning. This is an example of why you need to use the right terminology. Springs are stronger or weaker. Damping lets the suspension move up or down faster or slower. Not harder and softer.
It's a more accurate description of what's being done. So you
okay.
hold on. Okay, so you're telling me that the preload adjusters are absolutely useless.
Not absolutely useful. I'm going to tell you what I use a preload adjuster for.
I'm listening.
So I figure out how strong your spring needs to be by doing a math formula.
Okay.
The formula includes the weight of your motorcycle and the weight of the rider.
Right.
The wheelbase has a factor. A longer wheelbase bike spreads out the load more, et cetera, et cetera. And I do this math formula, and I go, this is the spring that I want for this weight rider.
Right.
And this is the amount of preload that I want on
okay.
the bike. Okay? What do I use sag measurements for? It's a test. It's a tool.
To find
see
out whether you have the right spring
if I'm
rate.
In the right zone.
Right.
I don't then change the preload. I change
the
spring rate. Okay? So now I'm at the racetrack. I'm riding my bike or I'm on the street.
Mm-hmm.
And the suspension is unloaded. Suspension unloaded means steady speed.
Okay.
So you're pinned in sixth gear in turn eight at Big Willow, or you're cruising on the freeway at 75 miles an hour. The suspension is no longer moving up and down.
Right.
It's steady. If at that point...
Catherine's home.
Hey, babe.
I'm going to put my pants back on.
If at that point the bike feels like a stink bug
right.
or a chopper to the rider,
right.
I would adjust the preload up and down a little bit on either end to get the bike to feel level, comfortable to the rider.
So it's geometry. It's really a geometry.
Geometry
adjustment
feel issue
in steady state riding.
In okay. steady state riding, exactly.
Got it.
Yeah.
All right, we are at the
18 minute
mark.
That's
okay.
the 2 minute board. Perfect.
Cool.
And that's a good stopping place for
springs
talks.
So
the number one takeaway. Sorry, I'm gonna beat this
into
your head. Think critically. Don't just believe the guy. Ask him a question, and if he gives you answer information that contradicts what you believe to be true,
ask
without
why.
Being an asshole, say, gee, I thought it was this other way around. Can you explain that to me?
Right.
And if he can't, he's wrong.
Fair enough.
2 minute board, Michael.
2 minute board. I'll wrap it up on this. Hi, Catherine. How are you? Excellent. Look, somebody brought food. We don't have to wait for the Hickory Farms package to show up. This is great. All I was going to say with this, all the years that I've spent in the paddock at various racetracks, watching guys who know what they're doing working on suspension, I rarely see them putting in preload or taking out preload. I see other adjustments going on, usually having to do with damping and in some cases, stiffness. You know, they're bottom triple clamps, the ones with three bolts on per fork leg, take one of the bolts out or put one of the bolts back in. Has to do with flex on the fork, but I very rarely see a rider come in and go, give me three rounds of preload, and you know, and that solves the problem. Not at that level. You know, if there's an adjustment to be made having to do with the springs, they pop the caps off and throw new springs in. Am I correct?
You see a lot of spring changes.
Yeah, yeah.
You never see me changing springs at the track.
Well, that's because...
From my perspective, it's a math formula. You have this much mass. I know right. what that mass is, unless right. I made a mistake in my formula. Now, there is, in suspension, a fair amount of feel.
Yes.
Maybe you could say it's 90% science and 10% feel. And so, you know, there's a range. If I'm going to go to a weekend, especially if we're far from home and it's important,
right.
I got the spring on the bike I think you need. And I'm going to have a spring on either side at least, right?
right?
And of course,
right.
if you're a big team and you're traveling all over the country, we're going to have a whole bunch of springs in the truck,
and
right? And you're gonna do what... And the other part of it is, it's much more important how the rider feels. Dude, if the rider is happy with 5 millimeters of preload and he wins the race, guess what?
He's getting
5 millimeters is the, right,
the yeah. perfect number for
exactly,
him.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. If it's 50 and he's winning the race,
suspension tuning is more mental than it is physical.
Well, there's a mental
element. Remember
to
me
it.
Talking about getting Kevin Schwantz to whack me in the head before I went out
right.
for practice?
Who was the guy?
That's real.
Who was the guy that worked rode Kawasaki Supersport? Not Fabian. Maybe it was Fabian Ferre. A few years back when I was interviewing the K-Tech guys. You know, they were talking about just slaving away at some race where it was like 1,000,000 degrees because he's kind of, you know, this particular rider was just like, it was all about feel for him. He was constantly changing things. And they, you know, but when they got it right, when they got it the way that he wanted it to feel, it was bloody freaking fast. It's a little embarrassing sometimes when something is horribly wrong with the bike. And the rider doesn't know that, and he still goes fast. Who was the...
I'll tell you a secret.
Who was the
you
rider?
You can get away with a lot more shit if you're actually fast.
Who was the rider who was riding the bike with the busted steering head bearings, was it?
No, it was John Hopkins.
Hopkins, right.
And the insert for the top adjuster for the triple clamps came out. The adjuster that changes the offset. And he still finished sixth. In a Formula Extreme race, AMA race, at Brainerd, despite the top triple clamp moving back and forth, you know, half an inch.
Well, maybe
he's Michael Gugis.
He's Ed Sorbonne. Maybe we can get Hopkins to send us some stuff from Hickory Farms. Thanks for joining us. Aloha.